Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Now, in 2015, mass graves were discovered on the Thai-Malaysian border at Wang Kalian in Perlis. It grabbed headlines. But despite the valiant efforts of many to keep the case in the public eye, allegations of gross violations of human rights have largely disappeared, sunk in obscurity. Now, in January this year, the new government, Pakatan Harapan, promised a royal commission of inquiry into what happened at Wang Kalian. We don't have the dates on the royal commission of inquiry, but there is a promise out there. I'm delighted to have with me today Mr. Aruldas Sinapan, or S. Aruldas. He's the author of an upcoming book on the death camps in Wang Kalian. He was a journalist who was on the ground discovering what was happening at that time. Thank you so much, Arul, for joining me. Let's go back to that time. I mean, when you tell the story, it's a complex one. You have many front pages. You were there at the Malay Mail. How does the story start? Where does it start for you, from your perspective?
Okay, there was murders in Penang mainland, in Seberang Prai. Continuously murders for a few months, especially slit throat murders.
So was that unusual?
Very unusual. It doesn't happen in Malaysia. As far as I've been covering crime and courts, never this such kind of murders took place in our country. So I thought there must be something wrong or something behind. There's a reason behind this, the murders. And all the victims were Myanmaris, Myanmar nationals. So after the seventh or eighth murder, I started to investigate. Why is it? What is behind the murders?
What were the police saying at that time about the murders? Did they think it was unusual? But they must have been doing their own investigation.
But they didn't say anything. Even they did not link the murders to any reasons or any other, assailants, connecting the assailants. No, they did not say.
Maybe we could have a look at some of those front pages that you met. I think this is right. So the gruesome Myanmar communal murders gripped Penang. And I remember this headline in particular, the chop up houses. I think that expression itself really grabbed the attention, I think, of readers. Now, how does this story, I mean, what exactly did you find about this story, and how does it link to the death camps of Wang Kalian?
Okay. That first story of the communal clash appeared in September 18th. Okay? Then continuously there were murders, especially slit throat murders, and what they went on to chop off the head, chop human parts. And there was one incident where in Alma, Bukit Mertajam, in a plastic bag, a head and a limb was put in a plastic bag in front of a policeman's wife's restaurant.
Right. And so, okay, so you said the victims are from Myanmar.
Yep.
And we know that at that point in time, there was the politics of Myanmar had gotten very aggressive.
Correct.
On a communal level.
Correct.
So this was, in some ways, reverberations from what was happening in Myanmar.
Correct.
Okay. So again, so when you discovered, how did you get to the chop-up houses? What was the chop-up houses about?
So that's where the victims were brought and they were chopped.
Right.
And
these would be Buddhist dumped Myanmar individuals, were they?
They're Myanmar nationals.
Okay. Regardless of their religious affiliation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Myanmar nationals.
Oh, so how do you go from that to Wang Kalian?
Okay. Following that, I did another story.
Okay.
See, 24 died in deadly crossings. This also on the mainland Penang, where bodies were dumped in rivers and oil palm plantations. And there was one incident where two bodies were dumped in a Chinese cemetery in Lunas, Kulim, and it's about 100 meters apart, a day. Then another incident where in Sungai Kulim, two bodies were recovered, and about 4 kilometers distance, same day.
How did you link all these things up? And what is the theory that you had in your mind? That what was going on?
Okay. These bodies, normally the bodies were naked. They wrapped it in bed sheets or blankets and just dumped. Okay. The modus operandi was the same to most of the bodies.
So you thought there was one single gang or group of people behind
this? That's right, behind this. And okay. My investigation helped me, I got some feedback. And what I came to know, the human smugglers have transit homes in these areas where the bodies were being dumped. So I written, so that's my story. I said people smugglers linked to the deaths.
Okay, so now we're still in Penang.
Yep.
Or at least we're in Penang in Kedah. How do we get to Perlis? Did you get to Perlis?
Okay. Then the Malay team, the editorial team said, okay, what is the source? Or what? Where's the route? So it is at the border. Because all of us during that time know that the migrants are coming in from the north borders, from Malaysian Thailand borders. So we started moving to check at the border, what is happening at the border. And at that time was the peak of human trafficking activities were taking place.
Now, at any point in time, while you're doing investigations, were you speaking to the police? Did they agree with your theory about what was happening? What were their investigations?
Normally, police won't agree.
They won't agree?
They won't agree. Okay, they will keep quiet and they will come up with their statements. That's what happens. That's what my experience was. And but still we went on. We went on investigations. Even at the border, we talked to the many villages from Wang Kulian until it is Bukit Kawitam. I think about 50, 60 kilometers. So we went to many villages, talked to many people. There was one Felda scheme, Bukit Tagar, and talked to many, because that's where there's no fencing or wall, they can walk in from Thailand.
Did people know what you were talking about? Did they have their suspicions?
Yes.
They knew?
They knew, and the migrants, you see, normally they will be injured and starved for food, they'll be in hunger, they will go knock houses with that had the lights. When the lights are on, they go knock for food.
Okay.
The villagers, many of the villagers told.
So the villagers knew that something was happening.
Yep.
How did you get from the villagers and your discussions with them to the camps?
Okay. While interviewing many at the villagers, then I was at a coffee shop in Jitra, a small town before the checkpoint, Kek Kavitam checkpoint. Then I overheard people talking about the camps and the mass graves.
People were talking about it at coffee shops?
My next table.
Right.
My next table.
Was it something that you thought it was going to be easy to get access to the camps?
To Wang Kulian?
Yeah. The trade involves lots of money.
Yep.
I'm sure people have been paid off as well. Was it a scary proposition? Did you fear for your life?
Of course, I'm risking my life. When we were at the border, the fear was always in us. Fear was always there. Because they can just go missing.
You can go missing. Okay.
You can go missing.
Well, we'll hold that thought. We'll come back with the continuance of this story, the fascinating story of Wang Kulian, the death camps, and what's happened since. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, S. Arul Das, a former journalist with the Malay Mail, also NSD. So he's made the rounds. He is coming out with a book shortly, in a couple of months. It is about the mass graves of Wang Kulian, who was there on the ground in 2015. Remember, the reports then, when at least coming out from the police side, said 139 graves were discovered, 106 bodies, mostly believed to be Rohingya people, and also some 29 camps in which people were detained. Now, these were camps deep in the jungles between Bukit Genting Perah and Bukit Wang Burma, which is perhaps, you know, names that many of us in the Klang Valley will not even know to locate on a map. But Wang Kalyan has become now the name we associate with those events. What was it like for you to eventually get to the camp? How did you get to the camp? What did you see? What were your feelings?
Okay. After, from the coffee shop, I talked to my cameraman, Sayyid Zainuddin. He was all the while with me working in these stories. So I asked him, shall we go? He said, okay. So immediately, we from Jitra traveled to Wang Kalyan. It's quite far, I think about more than 60, 70 kilometers or something like that. So we travel. First time, I have not been to Wang Kalyan and even Sayuti. So we travel, we drove, I think about an hour later, we reached Kaki Bukit. Kaki Bukit is where there's a hilly terrain. You have to travel about 9 kilometers on the hill. Then you come down to Wang Kalyan. Kaki Bukit is the other side. So Wang Kalyan is the other side.
And
of
you
the
walked?
No,
this
no.
Trail.
We drove. Drove about 9 kilometers on the hills. When you come down, it's Wang Kalyan. Okay, Wang Kalyan is a town, very small village, about 300 people living. Okay, and when we landed at Wang Kalyan, it looks strange. It is not Malaysia.
Where is it then?
No, it's a different kind of, environment. Like in a foreign land. So both of us had the same feeling. You know, and everything looks strange. I mean, no people walking. The village is very quiet. We saw one patron station just after coming down from the hills. You know, after that, you travel, I think, about 4 kilometers to the checkpoint. That is Prachant, cannot remember, checkpoint, Malaysian Thai checkpoint. So these hills, just about 300 meters from the checkpoint, where both of us parked. We parked the car and we walked up, started walking up. Because we wanted to...
But did you know where you were headed at that point in time? You knew that there were camps, but and you know the general area.
Yep.
How do you find it?
Okay. Both of us parked the car and we walked up. There are many paths to the hill. So, and all the paths look similar. Because we are not hill trackers, no? So all the paths look similar and we try to walk up. Then we walked about 200 to 300 meters. Then we scared. We scared because it's not safe. Without compass, we can get lost. And the agents of the syndicates can be there. So risk. And there are also wild animals on the hills. So we came back. I mean, I think about 5 or 6 paths we're trying to walk up to the camps, but we gave up.
Okay, let's fast forward to the discovery of the camps, right? What did you see? Was it shocking?
Okay. After that, I went 5 or 6 times. I alone went. Sayuta didn't follow. I went 5 or 6 times to the site and trying to walk up. I gave up also. Okay, this was in March. Another 2 months, on the May 11th, I went back to Thailand, where the deputy IGP of Thailand was coming to Hat Yai. Because earlier, a few days earlier, they found prison camp, migrant camp, near our border.
On the Thai side?
On Thai side. Okay. Thai side. So I went to Hat Yai, attended the press conference. Okay, then I talked to him, I interviewed him. And they also rescued about 300 people from the hills. and they were placed in a community hall. I also visited there. I think about 30-40 kilometers from Hajjai. Okay, then I met, I was talking to one or two people. I told them about the thing. They were willing to help me to go walk up there.
Okay, so you went to the camps. Now, the police on the Thai side, when did they had informed the Malaysian police, and when did the Malaysian police actually get involved? Because we're talking about quite a large site. I mean, 29 camps, 106 bodies, 139 graves. All these were excavated, not by you, clearly. I mean, you're the journalist telling the story. When did that happen?
The police did not do anything until I exposed.
Until you had it in the papers?
That's right. That's right. So I put words into the mouth of the deputy IGP to say there's crime on our side.
That's the deputy IGP of Thailand.
Thailand. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then...
what do you mean you put words in his mouth?
To say that there's crimes on Malaysian side.
He did, in fact, say it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agreed. I carried the stories. I carried the stories.
And that's when the police responded?
No. Police, our
police still did not respond.
No, did not respond. Did not respond. So after, then I joined, on the other side, I joined the Thai army with 50 to 60 people. I joined the Thai army to go up the hill. They were searching for the migrant camps. They were searching for the camps.
And this was on the Thai side?
Thai side. I joined them. So after walking more than 1 hour, exhausted. I say I cannot go further. And they also decided to come down. So my legs all solid.
When did you discover the Malaysian camps? I mean,
it was on May 13th. I joined them on May 11th. So just one day in between. I came back. On May 11th, I came back home to Penang. And on the May 12th, I received a call from Thailand. They are ready to go. I mean...
So was it the Malaysian authorities or the Thai authorities that discovered the camps in Wang Kalian?
No, it's me.
It's you discovered.
You and my cameraman.
Just the two of you, without any police aid?
No. Just both of us.
Okay. So when did the police actually then acknowledge something was happening, and with the numbers that we have, of graves and bodies, when did that happen?
My front page story came out on May 16th.
Okay.
May 16th.
Right.
1 week after the front page story, police came out to say, police announced that they are going to, exhume the bodies or going to the sites, to the mass grave sites. Just 1 week after.
Right. Okay. Now we'll stop there and we'll come back to look at the consequences. I mean, exactly what was discovered, who's been held accountable on both sides of the border. I'm speaking to Arul Das. He is a former journalist with the Malay Mail, and he's still a journalist. He's doing part-time work, or freelance work, rather. He is a man who can be credited for discovering the death camps of Wang Kalian. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, S. Arul Das, journalist formerly with the Malay Mail and NST, man credited with discovering the mass graves of Wang Kalian. He's coming up with a book about his experiences and the events surrounding that, and also the issues there that have significance with regard to this. He also, in recent times, the Pakatan Harapan government has said that it will perhaps have a royal commission of inquiry into what happened in 2015. We don't have a date on that yet, but maybe your book, Arul, will spur this government into doing something. Again, some of the astounding numbers: 139 graves, 106 bodies, and 29 camps. Now, all this discovered, of course, the story has been revealed. We know some of the allegations about the brutality of the camps and so on and so forth. Now, you spoke about working very closely with the Thai authorities, and somewhat unlike the relationship you had with the Malaysian authorities. They were much more distant and didn't really respond to you initially. What do we know about the consequences? The Thai authorities unearth what happened on their side of the border. How many people have been either arrested, charged, or sentenced on the Thai side?
I think more than 500 were arrested on Thai side. And they were prosecuted. Many were prosecuted.
And high-ranking individuals?
Yeah, were? Including, I remember, the mayor of Padang Besar was also taken into custody. I think he was also charged. And many people in Sattoon, where the activities centered, I mean, the boats berth, anchor. Sattoon is a fishing port.
Right, on the western side of the Thai peninsula. Now, okay, so 500 on the Thai side.
Yep.
On the Malaysian side, how many arrests or how many people have gone to court?
We have reported a few policemen were arrested. But we didn't see anyone being prosecuted. Four foreigners, Myanmar and Bangladeshis, were arrested. I mean, they were charged for human trafficking, and one or two pleaded guilty. The other two, the case is still pending in court.
Right. So there seems to be a huge lack of symmetry between the Thai response and the Malaysian response. Now, some people will say, perhaps on the Malaysian side, less people were guilty. But you've already told me about some of the things. The villagers were knew about it. We knew that transport was going from these camps to Penang, for instance, and that links to your earlier stories about the murders and such, and the mass graves. You had one of 24 dying in a deadly crossing, right? So why do you think on the Malaysian side so few people have been prosecuted?
I'm just puzzled. I don't have an answer for that. Of course, we have seen, I think it is almost 4 years now, 4 years. Nothing has happened, and the latest announcement of the government to set up Royal Commission of Inquiry to investigate the event, this might help the issue to be brought on the spotlight.
Okay. Now, the other thing that confounded me when I was looking at some of the news reports was that police of Perlis destroyed the camps, right? Now, for me, considering it's such a gross violation of human rights, that forensic evidence has been destroyed. The police have come out to say they didn't want the camps to be used again. That was their official line.
Yep.
Does that even make sense to you? As somebody who's covered crime for many years, do you destroy the scene of a crime?
No, definitely not.
So what is going on? Why did the police allow for the destruction of forensic evidence?
I don't understand why they make such a decision. But I remember our former minister, Dato' Sri Shahidan Kasim, he asked the government to maintain the camp.
But as a tourist site?
Argument was, knowing that this will fear the human traffickers, will make them stay away from the activities. That was his argument.
So he wanted to preserve.
And also, he added that it becomes a tourism.
Yes, I think that was what was reported.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So whatever Shahidan Kasim, I think former the Mantri Besar Perlis, now that didn't come to pass because the police did in fact go and... Now, do you think the destruction of whatever forensic evidence that was at the camps that had not been already documented, do you think that will hamper a Royal Commission of Inquiry? If they're going to go back now and to discover what exactly happened, will they be hampered by the destruction of evidence?
Definitely there will be some... they will lack in getting closer to the root cause and other findings. Okay, that definitely that will hamper. But they will have their way.
Okay, so we'll leave the RCI to do its job when it in fact convenes. Your book, I know you don't have a title as such for it yet, but tell us a little bit about, in the remaining minutes that we have, what do you hope to achieve by telling the story of Wang Kalian again?
Okay. I wanted to be the voice for the voiceless souls who have perished in this, their aim to look for greener pastures. I feel pity for them. I feel justice must be done. Let the truth prevail. Okay, that's my aim of doing the book. Because we have seen Titanic, the rich and famous. Their stories can be carried for another 100 years. If nothing is reported, if it is not documented, this will go forgotten. Nobody will remember this. For the innocent people.
You take us in your book through the events, your experience of it. How does your book end? What exactly is in the last chapter? Is it about the trade? Does human trafficking continue? Is Malaysia still an important transit point for human traffickers wanting to take people to greener pastures, sometimes in Malaysia, sometimes, you know, all the way to Australia? How do you conclude your book?
Okay, my conclusion is, I ask the world community, and especially ASEAN, to put pressure on Myanmar to recognize them as citizens.
The Rohingya people.
Their own land. They are neglected and, persecuted, you know, harassed, and whatever you say, against human rights, the violation of human rights. You know, they have not given education, no food, no job. What will they do? We have to see them as humans.
It's so wonderful to have you here and telling us a story. I look forward to the book, and maybe we'll bring you back when the book is finally published.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to S. Arul Das, a journalist who covered the Wangkalian death camps. In fact, discovered it himself. He's coming out with a book, and we'll give you more information on that book when, in fact, the publication date is revealed to us. This has been Let's Talk with Misha Radkutan, only on Astro Awani.
Thank you. Look forward. But like